It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Glorious morning here in the studio, WSB Radio. Wes Moss, your host here on Sunday mornings. And there's just so much to talk about today. I'm going to ask you this question, and you can start thinking about it throughout today's show. What do Uber and Marvel / Disney and Amazon and Tesla all have in common? Just, I'm going to throw that out there, because as I'm writing this week and thinking about, here we have, and I'm going to get to, well, here's what we're going to, I'm going to set the table and talk, here's what we're going to talk about today. The jobs report in the U.S., big jobs number that just came out on Friday, didn't really move markets all that much, but we've had a very strong year so far in 2019. For the week, the Dow was down just a fraction of a percent, the S&P 500 up just a fraction of a percent. For the year, though, Dow up 13.5%, the S&P 500 17%, and the NASDAQ up even more than that. We've already seen some high-profile IPOs, and the market is obviously ripe for this. It is ripe for IPOs. And IPOs are very much about timing. If the market is favorable and says, hey, the water's warm, come jump on in. That's what today's period in time is. We had this long dearth of almost no IPOs for many, many years. Now, all of a sudden, you're seeing IPO after IPO after IPO. And the biggest of them all is coming this Friday. And of course, that is Uber. Uber will start trading publicly, or supposed to trade starting this Friday, under the ticker UBER. Expected in the $44 to $50 range, Uber will be valued at between $80 billion and $91 billion. And that money, as we know, when we go public, now the public, millions of Americans now own a piece of this company. They pay for that company. Ultimately, through the IPO process, these companies that now go public raise tons of cash and now have a long runway to operate, even if they are losing money. And today's discussion will center around big, publicly traded companies that are just able to lose money, not infinitely, but just shy of infinity. And that's what it feels like. And that's what is so interesting about the time we live in. We're supposed to be, how often do we talk about profits here, manageable debt, increasing free cash flow, increasing earnings, a free cash flow that can easily cover any sort of debt service, and even better, negative net debt or no debt at all. Well, that's not for companies like what we're talking about today. Uber is going to go public, and Uber has lost so much money. They're setting records for losing money. There's another company that's setting records for losing money, and that company is Tesla. And they're raising money, even though they've already gone public. They're running out of cash, so that they're now raising more money. Uber, okay, filed their S-1. And in the S-1, they said they may never make a profit. They may never make a profit. Tesla, so let's talk about some of these other companies. We're going to get to jobs here. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters today about jobs. IPO, call this madness. I'd like to talk about productivity, or the problem with productivity, if we have time to do that. And if we have even a little bit more time, maybe we'll get to Warren Buffett's shareholder letter, where he talks about stocks versus gold. An awful lot to cover here on Sunday morning, and we're happy to do it. We love to do it. And the phone lines are open as well. So give us a call here in the studio, 404-872-0750. Surely you must have a question about the world that we live in and the jobs report and what happens with IPOs. I had a question not long ago via email, I believe, that was, hey, how do I get into one of those things way before it goes public? That's a whole nother discussion, because what you don't want, and again, we saw IPOs this past week that were up double digits or up over 100%. It feels very late to be buying an IPO after it's already up 100%. you want to buy it before it even goes public, but it's a very tricky game to be able to do that as well. So most investors are left to this game of saying, do I buy a stock when it goes public and everybody else can buy it or not? And that's a big reason why we're talking about Uber today. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. So let's skip jobs for a minute and go right to money-losing companies. So Uber filed S-1, said they may never make a profit. Tesla, by the way, just lost $702 million in the first quarter of 2019. So they did about $4.5 billion in revenue and lost $750 million just in a quarter. And guess what? Because they're running out of cash, this is, again, a publicly traded company. Because they're running out of cash, they are now raising from investors another $2.7 billion with a B. We need another $2.7 billion to get through another quarter, or else we're going to run out of money. And what happens when you run out of money? When you run out of money, then you cannot pay your bondholders. And if you can't pay your bondholders, then you go into default. And that's when companies have to file for Chapter 11. And that's the nightmare scenario for investors. There's a reason that even though counterintuitively, but Tesla needs more debt and more cash because they're running out of money. Well, they're raising this money in the public market saying, okay, here you go. Here's $2.7 billion. The stock didn't go down because they needed more money. The stock actually went up this week because it was, oh, well, now they've got another, call it 3 months, 6 months, a year to operate and still not have a cash crunch. So it was a sigh of relief that they took on all this debt. I think you know where I'm going with all this. So what's going on? How can markets and public investors continue to fund these massive losses? First, I'm going to have to blame all of this, and this has really happened now for, call it, 20 years. You've got to put a lot of the blame. If you're blaming anybody, where would you start? Well, you'd start with Amazon. Only in the United States, and only in the past 20 years or so, has a company been allowed to survive and then be funded for years and years and years and years while they're still losing money. It took Amazon almost 9 years to become a profitable enterprise, profitable company. Now, Uber going public and saying that they may never turn a profit. And the model isn't a whole lot different from a Ponzi scheme, except that these companies are being forthcoming about the public, those who buy their shares, funding their losses. The difference is they say we may never make a profit, but you can buy our stock anyway. We may never, ever make any money, but you would be happy. Talk about a nice disclosure for a company. Yeah, we might actually just continue to lose money into perpetuity, but if you'd like to buy our stock, it's going to come out this Friday. And then if you do that, it's going to fund our coffers to the tune of billions and billions of dollars. So then we can operate for a while. You look at Amazon's quarterly net profit. They went public in 1997. And if you look quarter by quarter by quarter by quarter, 98, 99, 2000, all the way into 02. In 2002, they turned a tiny, tiny profit for a quarter and then went back to losing money, really, until 2004. So think about how long that was. They went public in 97, tiny profit in 01, but then it wasn't until 2004. That they really started to consistently earn money. Imagine that. We're talking about 7, 8 years or 8 years or so with a publicly traded company losing money. And then they went back to losing money in 2012 and 2013 and 2014. Then finally in 2015, they finally at that point had the scale to produce what now looks like a long, long, long runway of profits, at least for now. That's really almost 20 years before really hitting a long-term, massively profitable stride. And it is an anomaly. You didn't see companies back in the 50s that would go public and say, hey, we may lose money for a decade, maybe 2 decades, but eventually we'll become profitable. And shareholders say, okay, that's going to be fine. That didn't happen in the 50s. It didn't happen in the 60s, 70s, 80s. Maybe there's other examples that I don't know of. Maybe somewhere around the world or somewhere else on the planet. But that's not the way public markets have really worked for the last century. Typically, companies go public with a window. Either they're already very profitable and now they're just going to expand that profitability, or they might need another year or two to get their act in gear, get scale, the public markets give them cash so that then they can expand and then they become profitable. But investors want to see that typically in a term of months, not decades, maybe years, but not decades. But Amazon has really kind of been the first major exception to that. The late 1990s, yes, there was the flurry of unprofitable dot-coms. And we all know what happened with that. The music didn't last that long. Funding, and it all kind of ended at one point. Funding, hey, there was a period of time where Pets.com didn't even raise revenue, but it was a multi-million dollar publicly traded company. And then the capital to allow them to continue to operate so that they might become profitable into the future, that dried up and the business went away. Just like that. Funding dried up for the whole sector for a period of time. And then anybody that was not profitable, that couldn't survive without more capital, just went away. And what happened? Publicly traded companies, those stocks went to zero. And then billions and billions and billions of dollars were lost. But because Amazon survived, so there were a few that survived that wreckage. Plenty of companies made it through, but really Amazon was the one company that survived, still not profitable during that period of time, and used that runway to get scale and more scale and more scale. And that model is what investors are looking for Uber to do as well. Amazon said we're gonna get the most scale of any other company in the world, and we're gonna lose until we do so. But once we get that scale, we get everybody on the planet as a client, or everyone in America, we can essentially at that point then turn on this massive profit spigot. And that's exactly what they did. And that's the story of Amazon. So there's this sliver of hope for companies now today moving forward that maybe they're the next version of that. But it's not something that a whole bunch of companies can do. It's for a very select few. The promise of maybe into the future. We'll continue this conversation when Money Matters returns. Whether traffic, the more Money Matters, straight ahead. Good morning. We're back live here. Sunday morning, Wes Moss, Money Matters. Ryan Ely here with me in the studio. Half of the Moss children are in here drawing barns and things. This is like what we do, what I've realized over the years. And again, my kids don't really want to come into the studio. There was a time when I would say, hey, you can do the weather. And they'd say, oh, that's great, exciting. And then that only lasted, a couple weeks. And they're like, I still don't want to go. And now they probably really don't want to go, because what we do here is that it's kind of like the time where we can do birthday cards, Mother's Day cards, anniversary cards. And if you think about it, you could take an hour every week of the year to do that, because somebody in your family, in your life, in some side of the family, a friend, a relative, is going to have some occasion coming up. With all of the real holidays in the United States and all the commercial holidays in the United States and all the birthdays and the weddings that happen in your life, you can find somebody to write a card to pretty much every week. And that's what we try to do here. So after a while, I realized that I just carry around colored pencils in my briefcase, in my bag. And we've got a giant thing of colored pencils. And that pretty much is the formula for Sunday mornings for these kids. And they also bring their iPads. Look, they still love iPads, and that's a hard thing to even get them away from. But I've got to have some sort of project for them to do in order to keep them away from these ridiculous devices that Steve Jobs invented. And I know we're talking about Amazon funding losses, because this is a huge week. It's an IPO week. Uber's going to become a publicly traded company, and they're going to raise billions of dollars in cash. And that cash is going to allow them to operate for another long runway of time. the thought, even though they're losing billions of dollars and setting records for what they're losing, as is Tesla, setting just massive losses, but the public is funding them because they looked and said, okay, well, Amazon made it through the rubble of the tech crash. They still weren't profitable, but eventually they became profitable. Now they're the biggest company in the world, or one of the top three biggest companies in the world. Jeff Bezos, we all know, is the world's richest person. So estimated net worth over $100 billion. Remember, these numbers fluctuate a lot because it's almost all that net worth, or most of the net worth, has to do with the stocks. The stock's up 10% in a day, down 10%. The net worth fluctuates massively. But just call it $100 billion, $120 billion. And that's according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. But there's a lot more to Bezos' story. And I think that most of us kind of know the story. And this is why we have this halo effect of a company like Amazon. Well, if Amazon did it and it made the richest person, not in America, but the world, then somebody else is going to do that as well. There'll be another company that gets that done. Bezos will stay the world's richest person even after the divorce from Mackenzie Bezos. She keeps about a 4% stake of Amazon, the company. That's worth, call it, $35 billion. She's going to be the third richest woman in the world. Bezos' annual salary has been about 80 grand a year. Most of that wealth, or almost all of the wealth, comes from Amazon stock. Another couple Bezos statistics that are mind-blowing. Bezos is so rich that an average American spending a dollar is the same as Bezos spending $1.2 million. So you drop a dollar out of your pocket, the average, how it impacts you versus Bezos, it's the same as him dropping $1.2 million out of his pocket. Bezos himself is 38% more wealthy than the entire British monarchy. And that's why we know that this can work. And that's, investing is about the future. And Amazon has worked so well, even though there's so many different companies that are in this path of carnage that didn't have enough money to operate, that didn't have enough time to get profitable. And I'm going to talk about a company that we all know so well, but you may not know, had to file for Chapter 11. Now, arguably one of the most profitable, game-changing entities within a publicly traded company of all time, not that long ago, didn't have the time and the runway and the cash flow and went bankrupt. And that's what we're going to talk about when Money Matters returns. You do not want to miss this. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Wes Moss here, Sunday morning, along with the Money Matters team, Ryan Ealy, Luke Moss, Jake Moss. Hey, Luke. And this blew my mind. And I don't know why I haven't read a story about this, but as I'm thinking through this, call it IPO madness, and I'm going to remind you of why IPOs are just such a unique animal. Let's go through some numbers here before we get to what kind of blew my mind. And we'll start with some metrics here. First of all, let's look at some metrics on Uber, which is, again, if you're just tuning in, about to go public on Friday, it's going to probably be worth about $90 billion. The what are you paying for that? You're paying because they're losing money. You're not paying a multiple of profits. You're just paying a multiple of revenue in this case. And investors at that range at 91 billion, you're going to pay 8x trailing 12-month revenue, just revenue. That's, again, no profit here. For some context, the FANG stocks as a group, so Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Apple, traded about 4.5x sales. Let's talk about Lyft. Lyft just went public a couple weeks ago. Lyft currently has holds the trophy for the largest recorded trailing 12-month loss for an American IPO at $911 million. It's almost $1 billion loss over the year before they went public. Groupon in 2011 was the prior champ at $876 million of loss over the prior year. Then they went public. And oh, by the way, the stock has returned minus 80% since that IPO. Minus 80%. But there's going to be a new king in town. Once they go public, no big deal for Lyft, nothing from Groupon. Uber lost, remember, Lyft at $911 billion for the year. Uber lost $1.1 billion in the first quarter alone. For the past 5 years, Uber has lost $12 billion. It has lost $12 billion. So much for the software business being a high-margin business. And it's a software company. It's not a transportation company. It is a ride-sharing software business, really. They're about 10 years old. And in their disclosure document, their S-1, they say, we expect our operating expenses to increase significantly in the foreseeable future, and we may not achieve profitability. And their growth is slowing. So revenue's growing, but the pace at which revenue is growing is slowing dramatically. Revenue did grow at about 19% during the first quarter. But it's much slower than it was if you go back into 2018 when they were growing at like 50%+. Now they're growing at 19%. So this is a company that's expanding revenue, but at a slower and slower pace. And then there's all these other questions about independent contractors versus employees and health insurance. And there's a lot to think about when it comes to the Uber IPO. But you're also talking about just these massive losses. And here, we blame this to some extent on the Amazon effect, because the Amazon effect is, well, here's an example of a company that was fine doing this for years and years, almost a decade before they went on a long streak of profitability, and then went back to losing money in 12, 13, 14, and then now finally back to a very profitable run, which is Amazon. And we all know about Jeff Bezos, and he's the richest guy on the planet, literally on the planet. I say planet a lot, but he is. And we look at that and we say, oh, well, that can work. But let's go through another story that blows my mind. Bankruptcy is about losing money, but we've just talked about a bunch of companies that are losing money. Tesla raising new money. Amazon lost money for a long, long period of time. But it's also about timing. How long will the public markets or the debt markets keep funding your losses in expectation that you'll eventually make a profit? Well, it didn't work for the long list of carnage that we all know that went out of business. So Lehman Brothers, they didn't survive. Washington Mutual didn't survive. WorldCom didn't survive. General Motors didn't survive. They had to go bankrupt in 2009 and wiped out their debt. Now they're operating again, but they could not pay their creditors. Well, Radio Shack, they're just gone. Blockbuster, they're just gone. And then we get to Marvel. Marvel Entertainment Group. Yes, the same Marvel that has the Avengers. The same Marvel that is now owned by Disney. The same Marvel that just came out with a little movie called Avengers Endgame. Marvel, not Marvel the ice cream, as Ryan will remind me, but Marvel Entertainment Group filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy not that long ago. So the year before Amazon went public, 1997, 1996, Marvel Entertainment Group filed for Chapter 11. Then it was purchased in 1997, about a year later, out of Chapter 11, by a toy company that said, hey, we like your comic book brands. Maybe we can make some money on the toys that we have, and we need your content. And then after many different iterations, was finally purchased by, as what we know today, Disney in 2009 for $4.2 billion. And I remember specifically driving one day, listening to CNBC, and I think I was on Freedom Parkway in Atlanta, because it just hit me. And this is back in 2009. that Marvel was getting bought for $4.2 billion. And I remember at the time thinking, wow, what a crazy number. They're buying a comic book content company that had really just barely scratched the surface with movies for $4.2 billion. To me, that seemed crazy at the time. Well, let's pull up boxofficemojo.com, which tracks the box office sales of any movie you want to look at. And I was looking at this earlier in the week, and the numbers were staggering, and I just pulled it up today. So this is as of May 3rd. So this is as of Friday. Remember, the whole company was purchased for about $4 billion in 2009. And over the past, call it week and a half, from one movie, from Marvel, that again, now owned by Disney, has brought in $1.914531638 billion. One movie. Almost just shy, $1.9 billion, just shy of $2 billion for one film. Domestic, $514 million. So $500 million here just in the United States. And then, oh, what about the foreign sales? Over $1.4 billion for a total of just shy of, or likely as we sit here today on Sunday morning, Saturday's a big movie night, very likely over $2 billion today. Over $2 billion in one movie from a company that was bought by Disney for only $4 billion. And how much have all the Avengers, or all these Marvel films done? So I'm going to give you a quick jog of your memory if you're not. And I know Marvel well, obviously, because I have four little kids and they're all boys. It's hard to find a movie that a dad, me, would like to watch at the same time. And my kids like to watch, and it all works out together. But this is the magic of Marvel and Disney. And these are the movies that come together where the kids love them and the parents, quite frankly, love them. I think I might like them even more than the kids. Dad, we want to go to Avenger Endgame. Dad, please, I want to go to Avenger Endgame. Guys, I want to go to the movie more than you want to go to the movie. Can't I want to go more than you guys. You think you want to go to the movie. I want to go more than you want to go. Can we skip lacrosse practice to go to the movie? No, we're not going to do that. But if it rains, and that's why they've been praying for rain for the last couple of days, the last like week and a half. They want it to rain so we can go to the movie. What are some of these other massively profitable movies? The whole Iron Man series, Iron Man, The Incredible Hulk, and of course, all the different characters that have now cropped out or branched out to have another movie. So Thor, he's part of the Avengers, but he has his own movie series. Iron Man, is Iron Man part of the Avengers? He is part of the Avengers. He has his own movie series. Captain America, he has his own movie series, also part of the Avengers. It's just the content of Marvel is just so unbelievably perfect for the digital age that we are in today and the capabilities of what we can do on screen and on film, digital, that has made this amazingly profitable. Guardians of the Galaxy, and then Avengers, Age of Ultron, and then Captain America, Civil War, and then more Guardians of the Galaxy movies, and then Spider-Man. These are all from Marvel. Thor, Ragnarok, I go down the list. They're all some of the best. Each one of them is one of the best movies you've seen, particularly if you're trying to find a movie to watch with your kids. Black Panther, phenomenal movie. Then there was another Avengers, Infinity War. And then there was Ant-Man. And even that was good. And then, of course, then there was Captain Marvel, which in its own right was also a phenomenal movie. And then there's Avengers Endgame that came out not even 2 weeks ago and now has brought in $2 billion. Well, as a group, this little group of superheroes has brought in over $20 billion. $20 billion for a company that they paid $4 billion for. Yet, not that long ago, Marvel ran out of time. They ran out of cash. They ran out of money. And even though today, if you were to strip Marvel out on its own, it would be I don't even know, a $50 billion company. Who knows what it would be trading at today. But it's a good example that even though the company was right in what they were doing and their content is ultimately valuable over time, it didn't mean they had the runway to make it without having to go Chapter 11 where people lost tons and tons of money. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with Tesla. I don't know what exactly is going to happen with Uber. I do know that Tesla's burning so much money that they had to go back to the well and say, hey, guys, we need another. Hey, investors, I need about $3 billion because if we don't get money and we don't raise capital, we're not going to be able to survive because we're burning cash. And the world was fine to give Elon Musk that money. And it's that same belief in the future that at some point, even though they may lose billions and billions and billions of dollars over the next couple of years, if you are a fan of Tesla, you say, well, you know what? Eventually it'll all work out and it'll become a mainstream car. And it's a car for the masses, which he says that 40% of America should be able to afford the Model 3, which is their scaled down version that prices in the high 30s, really in the low 40s, if you really wanted to have an engine. And it just hasn't worked yet. It just hasn't worked yet. And they're still in a period of time where they're trying to figure that out. And the public is willing to give them more capital to play that story out. The answer is, or the final analysis is, we'll see. The jury is still out. So proceed with caution. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. We will go to the phones. We're talking about productivity and jobs in America. Welcome to Money Matters. Stay tuned. We've got weather, traffic, then more Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. With a quick period of time before we've got to go to break at the 10 o'clock hour, I think I'd just tell this quick story about Buffett and his latest letter this year, 2019 for 2018. And he talks about when he was a kid, I think he was 11, he went all in. You go back to 1942 and he had $114.75. And that's when he was able to buy his first shares and he bought Citi's service preferred stock. And that was back when he was 11. So as of this past March, call it 77 years before, as 77 years as an investor, what did it turn into? The $114 in the S&P 500, let's say, all dividends reinvested would be worth about $606,000 as of the beginning of this year, 2019. That's a gain of 5,288, so 5,288 to one. Meanwhile, do that in $1 million. If you put $1 million in that same scenario, it'd be worth $5.3 billion today because the Standard & Poor's 500 has averaged, so this is the index, so this is a no-fee version of it, is 11.8% per year for 77 years. Wealth creation beyond belief. And then he talks about doom and gloomers, and he regularly says, look, there's still a lot of people that preach doom and gloom because of government debt. And Buffett admits that he's preached the same doom and gloom for many years. But also says that during that period of time when the national debt's roughly increased 400-fold in that same 77-year period, that's 40,000%. Suppose you had foreseen that increase and you said, you know, I'm going to protect instead of invest. I'm just going to protect and buy some gold. So that $114 that Buffett, again, could have put into the S&P 500. Let's say he bought gold with it. He would have bought 3 ounces of gold, 3.25 ounces of gold with the $114 back then. And that would today, what would that be worth today? It would be worth about $4,200. It'd be about $4,200, less than 1% of what you had realized or would have realized if you would have invested in America. Just the S&P 500, American business. And again, it's always such a great reminder from Buffett that if we're investing in the business of America, I don't know why that changes over the next 77 years. He calls it the American tailwind. It's the American tailwind. And Buffett is even saying, look, I'm not even a genius. It's not that he's that smart. It's just that he believed in the American tailwind. And that's why his Berkshire Hathaway has been a just mind-blowing 2.4% rate of return since 1965. Wow. That's a wow number. In the 10 o'clock hour, your calls, your questions, stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. It's a good Sunday morning. 67 degrees here on Peachtree. And we are live from WSB Studios here in Atlanta, Midtown Atlanta. So good morning. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us. If you want to find us, well, if you want to call in, phone lines are open. Ryan's on the phone right now, but you can blow up the phone lines and call us. And we're happy to take your call and questions. We'll do that here in this hour. And if I don't get to the call, Ryan typically can get to the call and help answer a question you might have. I think he's in there right now talking to someone about a capital gain or versus a primary home, a primary residence, and how much exclusion there is after the sale of your primary residence. And so we'll tackle anything here on a Sunday morning and try to give you our best third party opinion. And if it doesn't, sometimes a lot of times it doesn't even make it on the air. We're just here answering calls and answering your questions. And that is a wonderful part of Money Matters. And we love to do it. So give us a call here in the studio. Maybe you have questions about, what do people call about? Well, questions about pension lump sum decisions. Hey, do I take this pension or do I take a lump sum? What's a better deal? Because companies are constantly resizing and surplusing and downsizing and right-sizing. And they're saying, okay, here you go. Here's an offer to go somewhere else. And you have to make a call. What package is better for you? We'll help you walk through that math and those numbers here on a Sunday morning. Happy to do it. How do you fund a big expenditure? Maybe it's a trip or just a roof. You've got to put on a new roof. Where does it come from? Does it come from your Roth or your regular IRA, your 401k? Or do you take a loan or not take a loan or a brokerage account? And what pieces of the brokerage account do you take from to be most tax advantageous? Maybe you've got a plan that is a 401k or a 403b, and you're trying to figure out, hey, how am I supposed to reinvest this or rebalance this at my age? What's the right mix for me? And where do I put money away? Maybe you're a business owner. You're trying to figure out, how should I most tax advantageously invest money for the next 5 years that doesn't cost me too much because I have to put a portion in for my employees. I've got to put a portion in. I don't want it to break the bank, but I know I need to save. Or maybe it's a real estate or a mortgage question. If it has anything to do with mutual funds or ETFs, Sunday morning is a great time to talk that through. And we love to do it here on live on the show this Sunday morning. So give us a call here in the studio. The number is 404-872-0750 here on this Sunday morning. Whether you're out on the porch hanging out or on a walk and you have your iPhone, you want to give us a call, or just having breakfast or driving somewhere on this Sunday morning, we're happy to take your calls and your questions. Again, the number here in the studio, phone lines are open, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750. Or outside of Atlanta, which is, let's call it Texas or California or Michigan or Pennsylvania, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Again, the number outside of Georgia is 1-800-WSB-TALK, which is 800-972-8255. And we will get to the phones here in just a minute. But there's a lot to cover, too, when it comes to, what do we go to first? I really want to talk about productivity, because you missed the first hour of Money Matters. It was all about how public markets give more and more runway and time to companies that are not making any money. If you look at the track record of Uber, they're going to go public this Friday. They lost over $1 billion last quarter, over $1 billion in losses last quarter, and they have lost $12 billion over the last 5 years. But they're going to go public. They're going to get a ton of cash from millions of investors that buy their stock, that funds their coffers, that now they'll have a runway to maybe, maybe not, get profitable at some time. The runways have extended because of the Amazons of the world. Amazon went years and years and years before they were really profitable. And that model had made Bezos the most famous, richest person literally in the world. And there's that glow of, well, maybe somebody else is going to do it. Maybe it's this next company. And it's giving these companies like Tesla and like Uber a lot of runway to eventually, maybe, maybe not, become profitable. And we all know in certain cases, U.S. companies, we know that they can, if they, when they access public markets, essentially they have a wishful shareholders across the entire country, and they buy shares on hopes that, hey, maybe we'll see a profit in 5 to 10 years. But we also use another example of Marvel, the comic company, that the entertainment company that got bought by Disney. But before that happened, again, even amazing companies with amazing DNA, and I would say that Marvel is this really interesting example, that this is a company that eventually was going to become highly profitable. So call it amazing DNA at Marvel. Now multi-billion-dollar business in the Dow component owned by Disney. We know that they were bought for $4.2 billion. We know that Endgame, one movie in their series over the last, call it not even 2 weeks, has brought in about $2 billion. But they weren't always able to make it. The public, their debt, and the equity markets have a limit. And in 1997, Marvel actually went bankrupt. They filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, bought out of bankruptcy in 1997, and then ultimately sold to Disney. And now this is this, if it were a standalone company, it'd be worth billions of dollars. Others like Tesla and Uber, the jury is still out. So I would just proceed with caution and understand that over the course of history, 100 years of capital markets, companies are supposed to make a profit or have profit within sight in order to access public markets. I want to talk about productivity at some point, but it's time to go to the phones. 404-872-0750. Ryan, where do we start, my friend? We move my Apple. We're going to line 3. We're going to Lisa in Marietta. Lisa, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can I help?
Good morning. Okay, well, I'm kind of in a dilemma. I bought my house in 2012 for $70,000. Got a great deal at the end of the downturn. Now my house is worth $200,000. My question is, would I be smart to go ahead and sell the house to capture the equity, and then I'd have to rent something, so clearly that would be the next step, maybe an apartment or something. Or would it be better for me to not do that? And the biggest thing is my payment is so low. My house payment is $730, right? So an apartment certainly would be higher than that. I don't want to use the equity to, I'd rather it sit there somewhere safely for me when I get ready, if the market turns down again, to get another deal like that. This is my second purchase of similar circumstances. And by the way, I don't have a tax advantage on my payment every month to be a homeowner, because the standard deduction is higher than the amount of interest I pay. So I'm just in a dilemma here.
Well, so Lisa, let me ask you just a couple of questions. Why would you sell and go rent? Is that just to say, hey, this has been a really good run, and I want to basically ring the cash register? I don't want to continue this game any longer because it's already worked out really well. Is that the purpose of your thought here? Number one. The second question I have for you is, So are you not considering buying another house? Are you only considering selling and then going and renting?
Well, yeah, because I'm concerned that we're probably, if we haven't already, reaching the peak of the market. You know, the thought of this house ever being worth, $250,000, that's a great thought, but I doubt it would happen. But whoever thought it would have been worth a $200,000? But as we know, if the interest rates go up and houses now are starting to decline a bit in value, I don't want to wait 2 or 3 years and then suddenly now my house is worth $160,000. And I feel like I would have lost that opportunity.
Yeah. So this kind of goes back to the timing of the real estate market. And the real estate market is, so let me just address this. And this is just my opinion on interest rates. I think that we've got to remember that we think of interest rates almost like the stock market, and the stock market can move wildly, right? It's like, oh, well, we're up 20% and then down 20%, which is this massive, massive impact on my value. The interest rates, even though we do believe that it makes sense that we've kind of bottomed out in interest rates and that they're headed higher over time, it doesn't mean that we're going to wake up one day and that the value of your home over the course of a couple of weeks is going to crater by 20% like your 401k could. public markets or equities can move a heck of a lot faster than the value of real estate. Now, you're right. We could drop 30% like we did during the financial crisis. But the fact that real interest rates going up, I think we sometimes overestimate how rapid these moves can be. And I think that if you go back and look over the course of history, it very often can take 10 years. It can take 20 years before interest rates have a material rise. And I think we're in an environment where we think, yeah, I think rates are likely to be higher in 5 years than they are today. But I don't think it's going to be as dramatic as we think. We think of these big moves because we look at the stock market as a proxy for how quickly things can change in value. Well, with interest rates historically, it's been a lot more methodical. So I don't think you wake up in 6 months or in a year and a half and now I could have gotten $200,000 for my house. Now it's back down to 120. That is my bet on how things are looking over the next 5 to 10 years. So I don't think it's an emergency to do this. I think the other thing where this happens all the time is that what kind of place can you find for $700 a month? Is it equivalent? So if you go rent somewhere for $700, which is your payment for your home, what does that look like? Is it as nice as your house or is it similar?
No. I'm thinking probably more like $1,100 or $1,200 a month, really. And that's probably not even the greatest apartment in the world. Apartment rent is terribly expensive now, as I found out. And by the way, to answer your first question, the thought of capturing that equity and having it somewhere, perhaps, you know, even growing for me, would give me the opportunity, if we do have a serious downturn, and we very well may, depending on a lot of things, including our upcoming election, you know, perhaps. I don't know your thoughts on that. But at any rate,
Lisa, hang on. Hold that thought for 1 second. We've got to go quick break. Hang on the line here because I want to finally get an answer to your question. It's a really important one. Hey, do I buy or sell? Do I leave a place? Do I rent somewhere else? Do I capture the gain? So hang on a sec, Lisa. We'll come back with an answer. You're listening to Money Matters. Stay tuned. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on Sunday morning. I'm going to get right back to Lisa and Marietta. So, Lisa, one more question before I give you an answer on whether you should buy or sell your home. Do you already have an emergency fund, or is part of selling this house your version of now taking some of that equity? You paid $70,000, now it's worth $200,000. Is getting some cash flow as an emergency fund, or do you already have that?
Well, I do have an emergency fund. I don't know how much you consider enough. What would be a number on that?
Is it ever enough? Is it ever enough, Lisa?
Right. That's why I'm asking you.
Is it $10,000,
$20,000, $50,000? No, maybe like $5,000, $6,000.
How about just other after-tax investments?
Oh, no. I'm in terrible shape.
Okay.
I own another house that's completely paid for, so I decided, you know, I bought that one when the market was down too.
Well, listen, here's my thought, is that I don't want you to overthink the timing of the real estate market, like you would if you were buying and selling stocks. I don't overthink that, hey, just because rates are going to go up, now the house value is going to go back to the $70,000 you paid. Selling and then going out and renting a place and having your monthly mortgage payment of $700 now go to $1,200 in rent, just because you have now, call it $100,000 is sitting in the bank or $120,000 in cash. I would rather see you. How old are you, Lisa?
59.
You're 59. You need to be. This is a statistical fact that I have found. And then again, it's my opinion saying this, but because it's my research. But what my research shows me is that, or tells me, that the happiest retirees have either mortgage payoff within sight in the next 5 years or no mortgage at all. So I would rather see you, Lisa, from Marietta, I'd rather see you mortgage free in the house that you're in. And how much left on the mortgage?
No, but I already own a house mortgage free. I own a second house.
You already own
totally paid for. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait a second. And would you like to live there?
Possibly, but, you know, if I, down the way, I could see me living there, perhaps, yeah. Well, see, unlike some people, I took advice when I had this more, well, this is what I spent my savings on, to buying two houses, you know.
Well, let me answer your question two ways, because we're running into a break. I would, if this were your only house, I know it's not, but if your only house, I'd say stay, because I'd rather see you pay it off and be mortgage free than have $100,000 in the bank. Because no matter what, you got to live somewhere and you need a home. The fact, though, that you have another house, Lisa, that is paid off and mortgage free, and you are willing to live there, and you don't have a lot of other equity or liquidity, then yes, Lisa, I would sell this house. You've lived there long enough. The gain, you're not going to have to pay taxes on the gain if it's your primary residence, which sounds like it is. And then you now have this a ton of new liquidity for the future, rather even than renting it out. So I would say yes, because you own another home mortgage free, sell this house, bank the money. That is your retirement money moving forward, and start growing that now at the age of 59 for the next several years. And thank you for your call. When we get back, more of your phone calls and questions right here, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Well, all right. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. We're going to go back to the phones, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. We're going to start with Chad in Atlanta. Chad, what's going on? Good morning. Hi. How can I help, man?
So I guess what made me want to call is I got an email from Vanguard, where my 401k is, and they suggested that I increase my contribution 12% so that I could be ready for retirement. I already saved 16% of my income.
Wow.
So getting an email that was telling me I was 12% short was alarming. And I've also always contributed at least 12% of my income to a 401k, like my entire working life from, say, 22. I'm now 40.
You're 40 today.
Got it. Yeah, 40. And I've got about $375,000.
375.
All right. So my question is, am I really that short?
Well, you first of all, just remember, you probably got that email. It's probably, it's not probably, it's an auto-generated email from a robot, first of all. So let's just remember that it's some sort of artificial intelligence just emailing you to say, yeah, go save more, of course, right? That's never wrong. Telling you to save more is never necessarily wrong. It doesn't mean it's right. It just means you can't ever go wrong with savings, right? But I'm here to try to help you get a balance, because at some point you can save everything and live in squalor, and then you have plenty of money, or you could spend everything and then eventually live in squalor, and you've got to figure out a way in between, of course. So let's just do some quick math. You are 40. You have $375,000 already, which is a really awesome start. That's not a small amount of money, Chad. And so we have $375,000, and that's your present value. If you work...
And that would be, I'm sorry, joint, right? So me and my wife.
Sure,
right?
You and your wife, okay. Remember, there's certain financial bare minimums I think everybody in America needs to get to. And I think if you were 65 today, I'd say... You really need to get to $500,000 bare minimum, and then you've got that plus Social Security at a minimum for you and your spouse. And in America, that gets most people to a point where that's about what they need to live on if you don't have a mortgage. So the pieces of the puzzle, if you were 65 today, I'd say, look, Chad, you need $500. You need multiple streams of income, which you'll have with Social Security, plus that's $500 is going to continue to pay you. And then no mortgage. And that's kind of where those are the three bare minimum check marks you need to get to in America, with the cost of living from in 95% of cities in America, not San Francisco or New York City, but most other places, and you'd be fine. But in your case, let's just say you work till you're 60. So that's 20 more years, Chad. 20 years.
My wife would like that.
And what is it? Does that sound early?
I would work till I was 70. I'm a software engineer. You know, I like doing it. She wants to retire early, but yeah. So
well, let's just say the first checkpoint's in 20 years when you're 60. How old's your wife?
39.
So you're a similar age. In 20 years, yeah, even at just 5% a year, Chad, you're saving, and we're going to say you save, you're 12%, and you said you're 16%. So how much is that per year? You're saving 20 grand a year?
Not quite. Well, between the two of us, yeah, we're probably closer to 30 of what we're contributing. We're both, you know, right at around six figures salary.
Okay, so let's just do some math. And this is where compounding kind of comes in. When you're getting going, and you already have good momentum here. It's not like you don't have anything saved. You start to really feel it in those latter years, because 5% on now a million or 5% on 2 million starts to become a ton of money. And it's this compounding that you don't feel when you're 40, but when you're 57 or 62, now all of a sudden you've saved all these years. Now 5% on a big number is a pretty big number, and you can start to live on that. But if you just do the math here, and we start with $375,000, all right? $375,000 where you are today, and you do this for 20 years, and it only grows at 5%, and you save 30 grand a year like you say you've been doing, your 375 is now worth $1.986 million to be exact. So you'd have to, if at just this pace, plus 30K a year, you get to $2 million, Chad. And $2 million, if you can't retire on $2 million, then there's a problem. Because if at that point, 20 years from now, you should aim to pay off whatever debt or mortgage you have today. So you should have a free and clear house and $2 million in the bank. And you should be at the point where now you've got the opportunity to think about Social Security in only a few more years at that point. Now, you're 40, you might say, Social Security is not going to be there. It'll be there. It'll be there in some form. It might be less than what that green statement says today that you get every 5 years. Or if you go online to SSA.gov and you look up what your Social Security is going to be, it may be a little less than what they're telling you because there's some problems with the system, but it's not going to be zero. It might be 75% or three quarters of what they show you today. And that might be $2,000 for you and $2,000 for your wife. That's $4,000 a month. And then you've got this $2 million. And the $2 million, if you're pulling, let's call it 4.25% a year, that's $85,000 plus 48 between the two Social Securities. And now you've got 130 grand a year in retirement. Now, 130 grand in the future isn't as much as 130 grand is today, but it's still not nothing. And with no mortgage, then now all of a sudden you've got it so that you have a very, very, very comfortable retirement. But it just takes a while to play out. So yes, Vanguard emails you or whatever digital algorithm says you need to save more. Well, it's just some algorithm, and it's them saying, like, look, they're in the business to continue to get their investors and their clients to save more. So sure, that's a typical automated email, but don't let it freak you out, because I think you're way, way, way on the right track. But I'm glad you called. 404-872-0750. We'll keep going to the phones here. Let's go to Ted. Ted joins us from South Atlanta, or Southeast Atlanta. Ted, what's going on? How can I help, man? Ted, can you hear me? Let me turn this up. Hang on. All right. So, Ted, hang on. We're going to have to put him back on hold. Ted, okay. I can hear you now. Ted, you good?
Yes.
Ted, good. Okay. What's going on? How can I help?
Okay. I had worked for a major communications, can I name the company?
Sure, absolutely.
It's AT&T. I actually AT&T. Worked for Southern Bell. And then when it was turning years ago into Bell South, and I'll be 59 in October, and they've just sent me through Fidelity that they could buy out my, with a lump sum of $55,000, about $68. At what the information is if I wait in 2025, I'd be 65. And I could get $477 a month for that pension.
Right.
And I was kind of hoping to hold on to that to add to my Social Security and, just have more income. I've done the math, and I see that $55,000 doesn't even cover 10 years, but I thought I'd ask you for your information on that. I have options. I can roll it over to an IRA. I could take a lump sum in cash, which I wouldn't want to do.
No, you don't want to do that. You would want to roll into an IRA, otherwise you pay a ton in taxes on it. So you'd want to keep that IRA money.
Right. And there's one piece of the puzzle I don't have, and that's I could start an annuity today. But I don't know what that would be.
But it's worth the annuity in the future at 65 is $477 a month. Here's how I would look at the math on this, is that it's a, you have to do a little bit of a future value calculation, which you probably did. And if you got $55,000 today, and mm-hmm. and let's just say it, and let's go 5-6 years out till you're 65, mm-hmm. and let's say that it grows at 5% a year. So if we had $55,000 today, and it grows at 5% a year for the next 6 years. Your, the value in the future would be $74,000, right? So
okay.
that's the number I would be basing the math on. Let me just do this one more time to make sure we're right. As we do this live on the air, we look at your future value would be $73,000. Let's call it $74,000. All right.
Okay.
Then we know that you could also get instead this $477 a month. $477 a month times 12 is $5,700 bucks. So I would actually look at this equation as I could take $5,700 or $73,000 in the future. And okay. if I do my lump sum versus pension 6% test, and I've written about this on my website and Clark Howard's website a bunch. And if so, you mm-hmm. just Google Clark. If you Google pension 6% test, mm-hmm. You'll find an article on WesMoss.com that talks about these exact numbers. But if I did that math, which would be $5,700 divided by $5,700 divided by 74,000, mm-hmm. I'm gonna get 7.7, almost 8% a year. So that what that tells me is that if I want to look, start leaning towards the monthly amount,
mm-hmm.
if it's over 6% of the value that I could get.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, the monthly amount is almost 8% of what the lump sum amount would be. So
mm-hmm.
in this case, because it's way above the six, then I would actually lean towards doing the monthly amount. Now, what would increase the what would also bolster that case is if you also had some IRA money or 401k money. Do you have a fair amount saved in the retirement plan already at AT&T?
No, not really. So I do have a house that's paid for.
That's cool. Okay.
Some work, mm-hmm. and I just recently took an early retirement from the federal government where I was there over 10 years, and I've got my medical and life insurance paid for from a pension there, and I'm working part-time.
Do you have, for the federal government, do you have a monthly amount from them as well?
I do get just a small amount from the federal government. I worked for TSA, and I took an early retirement from there. Wes, it's getting so small because my HMO goes up about maybe $13 a year. And so it's almost down to nothing.
So it like cuts into what the monthly amount would be.
I'm going to end up having to like add to it, to my medical, but I'm so thankful I have that.
If it were just straight math and you had, let's say you had a fair amount of retirement savings, then I would say keep this as a monthly amount.
Mm-hmm.
Almost $500 a month is pretty attractive relative to $74,000. It's a good. Either way, the $74,000, you've got that money now in your pocket for the rest of your life. But the $74,000, it's a tall order for that to perpetually pay you $500 a month. That's a big number. That's
okay.
That's why in this case the lump sum, though attractive, and I don't think you can ever really go wrong with a lump sum here,
mm-hmm.
is slightly less attractive in my mind. Than the monthly amount, because the monthly amount percentage that they're effectively quote guaranteeing you,
mm-hmm.
and even if something happened to AT&T, the PBGC would come in and take this over. you would have, you know, 7.7% or almost 8% a year is a pretty good number as a monthly amount. Ted, I wish you the very best. Thank you for the call. Happy to help. Have a wonderful rest of your Sunday. If you'd like to find me and the Money Matters team, Ryan Ely, me, Wes Moss, we're here. We're in the Atlanta area, and you can find us at wesmoss.com. Send us emails. You can always contact us with your particular situation. If it gets complicated and you need help with it, this is exactly what we do. Happy to help. Go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Contact button. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. More Money Matters. We're here on WSB Radio. Straight ahead. Man, I tell you what, radio is so fun sometimes. Sometimes it's tough. Sometimes it's great. Today's been great. And it's because we have a lot of just great live calls. And we had one caller that we talked for forever about her specific problem. And then out of the blue, she said, oh, by the way, I've got another house paid for. Well, what? But that's just live radio. So thanks for the calls. And hopefully we provided some guidance and assistance to those callers. And then anyone listening could maybe take some nuggets from what we discussed today and apply it to your situation. James and Kennesaw, Randy and Jasper, love to get to you guys, but we just don't have any more time today. So call us next Sunday. And we'd love to answer the question, or just call us throughout the week, and we can talk about it throughout the week. You can find me and the Money Matters team at Wes Moss, WESMOSS.com. Ryan, we got a prize pack, though, man. What's the prize pack?
We do have a prize pack. It is a pair of tickets to Cirque du Soleil Volta opening October 10th under the Big Top at Atlantic Station. Tickets are on sale now at CirqueDuSoleil.com/Volta. Caller number 10, the prize pack is yours.
Volta as in vaulting into the air?
That's probably not too far off.
Yeah, I've never been to one of those Cirque du Soleil things. Have you ever gone?
Oh, yeah. Magical? Yeah, that's just pure entertainment.
Is it? Yeah, I've never been. My kid, every time we bring that up in our house, Luke Moss literally right now, he is scowling and shaking his head, no, we are not going. That's not something my kids have been able to stomach, at least so far. I'd like to go. Luke, you sure you don't want to go? No, still it's a hard no. We didn't even get to productivity today. If you missed parts of today, we had a lot of really informative calls. We also talked about really a fascinating topic, which is the IPO market. Uber's going to go public this week at a, call it, $90 billion valuation. And companies like Tesla are borrowing almost $3 billion just to stay afloat and have enough cash flow. But for now, the market supports that. And it's just a fascinating study of time and money for publicly traded companies. The public infuses cash to these companies to try to get them to profitability. There's been a longer window and more patience on investors ever since Amazon made Jeff Bezos the richest and most famous man literally on the planet. Well, we'll see how that continues to play out. Find me and the Money Matters team. Easy to do so. Just go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. And we wish you a wonderful rest of your weekend, a profitable Sunday. Stay tuned to the best programming on the planet right here, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.